Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting contains explicit language and discussion of mental health, including mention of suicidal tendencies. If you want to avoid this content, you can skip forward after our first listener question. Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, February 3rd, the Taking Your Toddler to a Funeral edition. I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog, Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to three littles, Henry, who's 9, Oliver, who's 7, and Teddy, who's 5. And we live in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
I'm Zach Rosen. I host the very short podcast featuring your best advice. It's called The Best Advice Show. I live in Detroit with my family. Noah is 4 and Ami is 1.
And I'm back. I'm Eamon.
Yay!
Here. I have a baby. His name is Musa. He is 7 months old, which sometimes makes me feel like I'm the baby. But yeah, it's good. It's good. We live in Newark, New Jersey. Staff writer at Slate. That's my job.
Eamon, we're so excited that you're back, and we can't wait to get all the baby updates.
My heart is pumping. Why am I nervous?
You missed us so much. We feel like the baby has grown up with us. He's a mom and dad are fighting baby, really.
He really is. He's a Musa is fighting with Baba thing right now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, on today's show, we have a question about preparing your 2-year-old for the death of a family member. Then Zach will talk to comedian, writer, and actor Chris Gethard. He just published a short memoir called Dad on Pills, Fatherhood and Mental Illness. And on Slate Plus, the headaches of exchanging Valentines at school. Y'all, I'm deep and I'm looking for some advice on how to calm the fuck down. That's where I am. But first, we have a very fun listener update.
Hi, Mom and Dad. I wrote in almost 2 years ago asking advice on how to know when and if we should add a second child to our family. Life continued with our boisterous little girl until my husband and I both knew we really did want another. After a very difficult loss of 3 months, we are now excitedly awaiting the arrival of our new addition this spring. I think I felt a lot of pressure to have my children 2 years apart, but once I let go of this, I realized that 3 years was a much more manageable gap for us. Thank you so much for your personal stories. It's great to hear that other parents have the same concerns and still come through on the other side. Thank you. Soon to be a mom of 2.
Oh, well, soon to be mom and 2. We're so excited.
Mazel tov.
So
proud of you guys. That's so
grown
up. We
love these kind of updates. So please keep sharing them with us, and we then hopefully will share them with you. But let's start off the show with a round of triumphs and fails. Zach, can you kick us off?
Absolutely. Tonight is a very big night, my friends.
Ooh.
Because my 4-year-old will be attending her first musical.
What?
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
She's going to see Lion King. I'm not going, but my wife and Noah's aunt and Noah's grandmother are going too. So this is very exciting for 2 reasons. One, because I haven't seen Lion King. I know people love it, but going to your first play is a big damn deal. And we love musicals in our family. And also, we've been hibernating for 2 years and not going places. And the theater requires a negative COVID test for kids who are not yet vaccinated. So Noah had to get tested for this, which is kind of annoying, but totally understandable. And so she's going, and I'm so excited for her. We watched the movie for the first time, and Lion King is deep.
It's very deep.
And I don't
Talk
know.
About funerals, man.
The play is
exactly.
Amen. Deep, I think.
Okay.
The movie. At least I found it less. I mean, I've like sobbed at the movie. Lion King was the first play we took Henry to, but it was in Dutch. So maybe it's incredibly deep. I just was lost in translation.
That's such a good language to see Lion King in.
There's a lot of that. Is she going to get dressed up? Is she excited about the whole production of everything?
Yeah, what does a 4-year-old wear to a play?
I don't think she's going to change clothes from school. I'm just hoping she's going to take a nap after school because it starts at 7:30. But the other thing, amen to your point, is that Mufasa dying was like a big deal when I first saw that movie. And we've been talking about death since. Yeah, I think this sets us up to talk about today's listener question. But Lion King is such a joyful and heavy story. And I feel like it's a rite of passage. And this is our week for it. So it's exciting.
Did you love Lion King when you were growing up? Is this like a big moment for you too?
Oh, big time. Yeah, I loved it. I think I was telling my wife the other day, it's one of the only movies I've ever seen more than once in the theater.
Mm. Oh.
It came out in 1994. So I was 10. So we introduced it to Noah when she was 4. I don't know if that's too early, but she seems to be taking to it.
The play to me is so magical because all the animals are on stilts and just these incredible costumes.
Like, the way they do the birds too, with like, stick.
Yeah, I mean, it's
flap them around.
Puppet show, but live theater. But yeah. It's just such a colorful, wonderful.
You should go. Whatever plans you have, cancel them.
I got to babysit the baby.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah. Oh man.
Okay, that's an amazing triumph. I'm so excited. Okay, Iman, we need all the details about the things.
I don't know if we have enough time for details because every day is a freaking adventure. Talk about Lion King. Oh my God. Musa is just like, it's so crazy. So he's 7.5 months now. He laughs. He's a freaking laugh. He has attitude. I'm feeding him food now. It's not just the bottle, and he can hold the bottle by himself. He could sit up all day. He just grabs things and yanks them, which is kind of concerning because now I have a lot of plants and a lot of hanging vines, and he'll just like snatch things. Yeah. And I'm just worried about I just know what's going to happen next. I know what's going to happen next. So now I'm trying to get around to like baby proofing, and I really don't want to because I didn't grow up around any baby proofing. I had 4 siblings and just everything could kill you. And that was just how we lived life back then. So I'm kind of weighing whether or not I want to baby proof and how much do I want to baby proof.
Just the things that cause real danger, like a small falling plant. That's a lesson on gravity.
They probably live, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fine. They'll be fine.
Exactly.
I don't know. So that's the thing. It's like all of the chemicals and the dish detergent and all that stuff is in a room and it's locked, like a closet with a lock.
Yeah, that's the stuff I worry about. That and electricity.
Yeah.
All right, so you took care of that.
But my partner wants to like put plastic things on the corners and she wants to like plug the plugs and with like these little plastic things.
You should do the plugs.
Really?
You know how he's grabbing things now? He's going to get into a phase of what can I put things in?
Oh, no. It's really funny. We used to have like an old huge television set, and one day it stopped working and my mom took it to the television set repairman because that was a thing that we had.
Yeah.
And they opened it up and they found like, I think like $30 worth of quarters and coins and all this stuff that we should just slot into the television set. R.I.P. that TV set. Back to Musa. Musa is, he's a riot. We had a friend who had a baby just 2 months after we did. And she came over and brought her baby. And so today was the first day that Musa ever met someone smaller than himself.
Oh, what did he think?
He's like very protective of him. He just keeps like an arm on him at all times.
Yeah.
You know, you plop him down. Even while they were both drinking their milks, holding their bottles, he just had one arm just like on him. Just to make sure that he's still there. Yeah.
Aww.
It's really cute.
I love that.
I know.
That's such a fun face. Okay, well, I have a big old, like, big kid fail.
Oh, no.
So, you and your little kids. So, you know, we're doing our first year of having a kid in public school. We were in Dutch schools and then homeschooling, and then Henry got into School in the Woods, and so we're there. They have a big project at school. They got these stories and they're learning to retell them, and they're from all different cultures. Henry's is a story from an indigenous peoples about coyote and getting the bows and how all the different animals gained like their strength and power. And the thing is, he's like a really good reader. He can read. He read it probably twice, memorized it, can recite it.
Wow.
And so he will do fine. But to me, the entire point of this exercise is to do better, right? Like the whole point is to be pushing them to learn new things and do better. And so they've had several weeks to practice this. His presentation is on Wednesday. And I asked him yesterday, you know, the sheet came home from the teacher asking them to practice two or three times at home. He's like, well, Mom, the other people don't even have theirs memorized. I'm fine. And I just have this like, yes, he is absolutely fine. He will do totally fine. But it's like not good enough for me. And my husband is very, Jeff is like, we need to push him kind of slowly to make these changes. He did his little presentation. It was fine. He had his hands in his pockets, kind of dancing around, kind of not really paying attention as he recites the story to us. And I'm like looking at the grade sheet and I must have just had the most like mom face because he was like, I can't do this if Mom's going to look at me that way. And I was like, I can't do this if you're not going to try, you know, and just like it was so bad. I ended up like leaving with the little two kids and letting Jeff kind of sit with it. And then Henry came upstairs and says, well, Dad says I'm going to get a 4, which is the highest grade in this grade scale. Mm-mm. And I just was like, for some reason that set me off. And I just was like, well, that's great. I don't really care what grade you get. I'm disappointed at the amount of work you've put into this. And then walked out of the room. When I came in to do bedtime stuff, he was like, can you just sit on the floor and tell me what you think I could do better? So in that sense, it worked. But I also just like, I don't, it's like not the mom I want to be. Like, yes, I got the outcome that I wanted. And this morning when he did it, it's markedly better because he actually listened to the suggestions I had and the suggestions that Jeff had. Jeff had given him some suggestions as well. But I don't feel great about how it happened.
I see where you're I see where you're coming from. It's just that I think I see it as a success. It sounds like he really like did grow in that moment. And it sounds like they're moving forward going to be thinking about that and thinking about how can I do better, which is what you wanted. I can only hope that I could be like that effective of a parent. Like, that sounds great.
But am I using shame or does it matter? Your point is it doesn't really matter what tool I use.
Tone is also important. How did you say it?
I did not yell. I just said, I'm really disappointed in what I saw downstairs. I always say, like, I still love you. I say that all the time. Like, I love you no matter what. I love you whether you get a 1 or a 4 or you don't try. That will not change my love.
I think that's totally legit. I think you're just lovingly pushing him to try harder. And that he asked for that feedback, like Iman said, that's huge. For a kid to ask for feedback, how can I do this better? Like, that's a big deal.
I do feel like, though, some of it is that I'm entering into a different, you know, stage of parenting. Because he's almost 10.
Yeah.
Wow.
Guys, I may not survive.
I think you're doing great, honestly. I'm envious. It sounds like that couldn't have gone better. And maybe you know that there's room for yourself to improve. So maybe there's like a weird matrix thing happening where you're disappointed in yourself because you know you could do better.
That is it, Amon, actually. I'm disappointed in myself. Maybe I should tell him that.
Aww.
Not only was I disappointed in you, I'm disappointed in
myself. And disappointment is not something that you should run away with either.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Well, with my problem behind us, we move on to somebody else's problem, which is being read, as always, by the fabulous Sasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad, it looks like my mother-in-law may die in the next few days. She has dementia and is refusing liquids, food, everything. I'm just so sad for my husband, even though he feels like she's already gone anyway. I'm sad for my 2.5-year-old. I'm sad I never really got to know her due to distance and cognitive decline. Her decline over the past year, and especially the last 4 months, has really accelerated, so while it's not unexpected, the timing is a surprise for me. How do I handle grieving and this funeral with my 2-year-old? Thanks. Adulting is tough.
I'm sorry.
Well, I'm sorry for this loss. Adulting is tough. This is one of the hardest things in life, and your question is really good. First, I thought we could just talk about, Do you two remember when you first went to a funeral?
The earliest one I remember, I was like 12 or something. It was my uncle who I really was like very extremely close to. And I didn't give myself room to cope. I just sort of put my head down. And every time anybody came over to like say anything, I was just like acting like I was mad at them for like talking to me like I couldn't handle it. And that, I mean, I was a little kid, but I can't remember anything before that. What about you, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I don't remember anything probably prior to those middle school years. I grew up Catholic, and so I definitely remember like the ceremony of everything, because everything for Catholics is very, there's a lot of ceremony and a lot of just procedure of how things are. And so a lot of that has stuck with me. But I don't think my parents ever took me to a funeral as a child. If they do, I certainly don't remember. But I can remember, like, weirdly, the one that really sticks with me is that my orthodontist died in a helicopter crash, of all things. And like that, I think, was this first time of like this recognition of like death taking people kind of from your life without any rhyme or reason, right? Not just like a person who had gotten older who had passed away, but this like person that I saw all the time and then them just being gone.
I mean, 2.5 years old is, I mean, there's so many ways to think about this, but in my opinion, that feels like it's too young to explain the concept of death. I think at this point, let a kid be a kid. So just 2.5 years old, I wouldn't even go there personally.
I mean, I'm a big believer in answering the questions with real answers. So definitely like not hiding what you're going through personally, and also not hiding like if they ask, like, I think there's a lot of harm to be done in using like euphemisms or not explaining things like, oh, if you say they went to sleep and they never woke up, like that can be really scary.
Yeah.
So saying like they died, their body stopped working, to me is less scary. But I also agree that like 2 is so little, like, can they even form these questions? And adults have a tendency to over-explain things that don't necessarily need to be addressed.
Yeah, like I think 2.5 is old enough to understand sadness while not necessarily understanding death. Mm. And so whether or not you take them to the funeral, we Jews do Shiva. So like for the 7 days following the funeral, we sit with the bereaved and are just solemn and like hang out in the house and, you know, don't listen to music or party. We just like talk about the person that we lost, and whatever religion you come from, there might be some of that after the funeral. And I think for the kid to be around sad people is great. Like, I think it's really important for kids to see mommy and daddy not being joyful sometimes. I don't think there's any reason to shy away from that stuff. And if your kid asks, like, what's wrong? You could just say, if you're not ready to talk about death, which I agree, it too is early to talk about that. You can say, I'm really sad. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fine. So there's you know, two questions here. What do we do about the grieving and what do we do about the funeral? Maybe you don't take them to the funeral. That, of course, you'll figure that out for yourself. But like, I wouldn't shield them entirely from you being sad and at a loss. I think that's important.
It's a really great point.
There's some very joyous things about gathering for death as well, and in remembering people and being able to be with all these people you love. Like, how often are we able to gather? We wish we were gathering for something else, but still having the love of these people around. For the funeral, I had like very practical advice, which is like, you know, your child, can your child sit through this type of ceremony? And keeping in mind that I think people sometimes think like, well, my kid needs this or the family needs this. Like, will my child being there be a distraction to other people? Because the funeral and that process is really a closure process for everyone that's left here. And so are you somehow taking away from other people or are you adding to it? There are certainly situations in which the children are an important part of that and helping other people grieve. There are also times in which, given the type of ceremony you're going to have or the type of thing that's happening, that it's just really inappropriate. And I think that's a deeply personal decision, and it's something you should certainly obviously talk to your husband about and talk to their family about. What are other people doing with their children? Mm-hmm. But there are going to be a lot of people at the funeral that behave in a lot of ways that are not kind of typical behavior. And so what is your child going to do with that information? Mm-hmm. And just make the choice that's best for your kid. They're not going to remember at 2.5 whether they were there or not there. So it's really more of a decision for you.
Right. You know, and I had to learn this a weird way by taking my kid on a plane when he was just like crying and being just too much for the people around him. So I would say just if you do decide, if you just figure out like what you want to do first and then decide that you want to take your child to a funeral, it's okay to give yourself a way out and say to yourself, okay, if things aren't going exactly as planned, it's fine to just get up and leave. I think people would understand.
Yeah.
People tend to put a lot of pressure on themselves to apologize for people and to push through the annoyances and the crying and everything. It's okay. I think also not going to the funeral is a good choice too. Like, there's no wrong choice here.
And just so you don't have to miss the funeral, if your kid does have to leave, just get a babysitter, someone that can be with them at the funeral with you, who they trust. Because you don't want to miss out on your opportunity
you
to grieve.
Be there too for your spouse.
Yeah.
There are lots of great books out there. I don't have any specific recommendations, but there are so many great books for children kind of about death and about the grieving process. So I also really, really recommend checking out some of those, reading them, kind of prepping. This is a fundamental human experience. We're going to lose people in our lives. And in the end, right, we're all going to die. So hiding that from your kids, I think, only leads to bigger questions later.
Amen.
One of the not fun parts about parenting.
Yeah.
Well, listener, we are sincerely wishing you and your family well. If you have a question, please send it in. Email us at momanddad@slate.com or do what this listener did and post it on the Slate Parenting Facebook group. Occasionally, we snatch questions from there too.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
Zach, I know you're a fan of our next guest, Chris Gethard. For those of us uninitiated, tell us a little bit about him before you two talk about his new memoir.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's safe to call him like a cult comedy hero. He's from New Jersey, and he first became semi-famous as the host of his own public access talk show called The Chris Gethard Show. It eventually ended up on cable and kind of launched him into the, I wouldn't say mainstream, but mainstream adjacent. He's been in movies and on TV. He was in that movie Don't Think Twice, which I love, that Mike Birbiglia film. He hosts two podcasts, and now he is a dad to a toddler. And he's written, I don't know if you call it like a long essay or a short memoir. It's on Scribd Originals, so it took me like a couple hours to read, and I'm a slow reader, so you can get through it pretty quickly. It's 40 pages. It's beautiful. It's called Dad on Pills, Fatherhood and Mental Illness. I totally recommend it, and you can learn more about how to read it yourself by following the link in our show notes, or you can just Google Dad on Pills, Fatherhood and Mental Illness. So, you know, not surprisingly, we talk about fatherhood and pills and mental illness. All these topics, I think, Chris talks about with such humility and grace and humor and vulnerability. I was really excited to talk to him. Here it is. Well, Chris, I read your new memoir, and honestly, it deeply resonated. Thanks for putting yourself out there the way you did.
Oh, please. I'm lucky to be able to put myself out there, and I'm so sorry to hear that it resonated. That's...
Why are you sorry?
Well, anytime you write about depression, let alone thinking about my kid through that lens, is hard. So if you identify with it, I'm like, well, I hope you identify with some of the fun parts and the funny parts as well. But, you know, in its guts, I think it's a tough conversation.
It's a tough conversation. And yes, I do identify with the funny stuff too. But I think, honestly, man, like, to not have that conversation with our kids right now seems so much less appealing than to have it.
I think people my age are kind of the first generation of parents that have to think about how to have the conversation, because it wasn't really an open conversation up until a few years ago. Adults were keeping it very close to the vest as far as taking medication and seeing shrinks and all this. So now all of a sudden we have to figure out how to navigate kids in that conversation. That's interesting. It's tough.
It's super interesting. And I mean, honestly, I find this to be like a supremely hopeful point that you make, this notion that we're the first generation that's going to be talking about it in a new way with our children, or, you know, frankly, talking about it, you know, rather than pretending that it's not there.
Yeah, it's wild to think about. Growing up in the 80s, there's so many kids who got enrolled in karate classes when their parents these days would opt for therapy instead to try to solve the same problems. And yeah, it's very strange, especially to be a dad and to have a son and to think about like toughness and masculinity and all that. It's pretty head spinning, but I'm glad it's resonating with people.
I mean, the first emphatic point you make in this piece, you say your kids are born into your bullshit and are responsible for none of it. Own that. Make sure they know it. It's perfectly okay to have a bunch of bullshit in your past and in your brain. You deal with it. Don't make them shoulder the load. So I'm wondering, at what point in your parenting journey did you learn this lesson?
I felt it even before he was born. I mean, that's kind of at the root of this whole essay existing, is me sitting here going, we're going to try to have a baby, and I take pills every day, and I've fallen off the wagon in not so long. I mean, like 7-8 years ago, I fell off the wagon, and I've had multiple episodes where people have sat me down and said they were going to commit me to a mental hospital because I seemed so out of control. You know, I'm going to have a kid. So all of the self-questioning, I was just firmly committed to the idea of if he has his own mental struggles, I'll have his back hard, but I don't want him to just have mine by default. I don't want him to be saddled with mine. Like, he at least deserves some breathing room to figure out what his own lapses are. I expressed some of these feelings to a friend once, and the person said back to me, you know, like, the fact that you're worried about this stuff is such an advantage for him, you know, because my parents are fantastic, mm-hmm. really, really incredible, and I think they know that I admire them and the job they did greatly, but it was not a conversation they were ready to have, and I'm very ready to have it.
You've been really open about mental health, and you wrote that it's a huge honor to let your guard down and inspire others. But is there a flip side to that? Has it taken a toll in some way?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, this piece, Dad on Pills, this is really the first I've spoken to mental health since my HBO special, which came out in 2017. And there's been so many times in between where people have asked me to come speak at events or participate in things. And I've by and large distanced myself from it because A, it's not the sum total of my personality. And I don't want to just be the depression guy forever. Right. And I've kept some distance from it. And then on a personal level too, you know, I put out my HBO special where I spoke very openly about it. Like I said, that was 2017. It came to HBO 2016. I did it off Broadway. There's a few things I think about. It's like, one, it was written up then as like this really notable thing. And I don't know that the same show would get that now. Because the conversation has, even in the past 5 years, shifted so much that I don't think it would have felt as risky today as it did 5 years ago to get up there and be like, yeah, I'm a guy, I'm on pills, I've tried to kill myself, I've thought hard about it, here's what the side effects are like, and a whole bunch of jokes. I like that the conversation's not as risky as it once was, but I still get multiple messages every week from people saying they saw it and it helped them. And 99% of the time I sit there, I go, oh man, like, if I never work again, what a cool legacy. Like, I made a thing.
Heck yeah.
And it helped some people. And that's better than I thought I could ever do. And I helped some people who feel how I have felt at my loneliest. Like, what a commendable thing. But I'll tell you, the other 1% of the time I sit here, I go, there's so much pain and sadness in the world. And by speaking publicly about it, I have opened myself up to becoming like a bit of a receptor of it. That now people know that I'm someone who will have the conversation and has had the conversation, and that's on me. And now I'm responsible for having it. It's not the easiest thing in the world, and it definitely messed with my head. Messed with my head a lot. My friend Gary Goldman, who is a great, great comedian, much better than I am, he did a special on HBO, I think last year, and he got really honest about his mental health. And we sat down, we went and got lunch, and somebody put us in touch. Someone who I work with professionally was like, you got to talk to Gary and just tell him what's coming. And I was like, Gary, just like set some sort of like internal parameters for yourself now, because like you're about to hear some really sad things from people all over. And it's not always easy. I have no regrets, but I definitely gave a piece of myself away for sure.
And I can imagine someone walking by and seeing you two at lunch together being like, oh my gosh, this is the freaking Mount Rushmore of
sadness.
Funny bros.
Yeah, there you go.
Great depression meets career suicide. I can't even comprehend.
Yeah, the ultimate mashup, man. It's like when Jay-Z and Linkin Park got together. I remember I was once out of town. This was before my son was born. And like many a New York artist, my wife and I would sometimes go, okay, this weekend we got nothing. Maybe we can go up to the Catskills. And we were up there, and I went to this little restaurant. And the guy comes out and walks up to me and loud in front of everyone else in his restaurant. And he goes, hey, thanks for coming to my spot. Don't kill yourself while you're here, huh? And I was just like, I don't, man. And like, I laughed because it was so twisted, but I'm like, yeah, like, I am effectively a character on a screen to this guy. And that's who he's yelling at. And he's happy I'm here, but he doesn't realize, like, I might be in a bad place, man. But sometimes I'm just like, oh, God.
It's an awful joke, God. And it's a joke that people have made to you before, you write about. Now that you're having a kid, you can't kill yourself.
Yeah, that one happened. Yeah, the Catskills one was years ago, but that I've gotten that more often than you'd expect. And a lot of times from other comedians who inherently are always sort of dark with each other, but yeah, buddy, you got a kid now. I guess you could kill yourself. And I'm like, oh, really?
Not funny.
Yeah, I can. Well, it's one of the things that was hardest to write about in the book, and that I was kind of took the most finessing, because I'm like, kind of offer up the point of like, yeah, I can. Like, I can. And I might. And I'm someone who historically has tried and has thought about it. And I pray that I don't. But by saying, hey, you have a kid now, you can't kill yourself. Well, no. Because that presupposes that he's responsible for me. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. Mm-hmm. I'm responsible for him. He's not going to be responsible for me for many, many decades, hopefully. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that joke was like, I would go like, like people would say it, and I'd give like a clearly fake like, and just kind of like move on. But I was like, why is it bothering me so much that this is people's joke? And I go, oh, because that joke puts him in the line of fire in a way that's really not fair. And got my gears turning, and it shows up in the essay too, of like, I think I'm not the only person in my age group who maybe feels like our parents' generation handed us a bunch of their baggage. And I think it would be a really nice rallying cry for my generation to go, let's push the reset button on that. This little guy is not responsible. God forbid I ever do something to myself. Probably the last person on earth who should take any responsibility is my son.
Yeah.
All he did was like show up without any choice in the matter and try to figure himself out. So that joke really, it like scared me and grossed me out, and took a long time to figure out why, but the process of figuring that out was kind of a major impetus in putting pen to page on this one. And it's part of why I felt like this was actually worth opening up about this stuff again, because he does not need to worry about this and he is not responsible for it. And that felt very cathartic to write and to sort out those thoughts on that side of it.
What do you do at home, Chris, to make him know that?
Well, at this point, nothing, because he's 2.5.
Right.
So I mostly just want him to live in a house that feels safe and happy and secure, just like I think all parents have this instinctive desire to do. Mm-hmm. I tell him I love him every day, and I make sure he knows I mean it. There's usually at least one or two quiet moments a day where I'll just go like, buddy, you know I love you, right? And now my father and I have never discussed, my father's never told me he loves me. I'm 41 years old. Like, we were not that kind of family. Mm-hmm. And look, I know he does.
Right.
We just have never said it. And mm-hmm. I'm not the only one in my age group.
Of course.
I think that has this going on.
Yeah.
So I let him know. I make sure that every day there are stretches where I turn off the email and I put the phone on airplane mode and he and I just play with dinosaurs. And I think a lot of that is so simple. That's one of the true joys of this I found is going, there's no guidebook to this, and it's daunting and it's exhausting and it's terrifying. But at its core, it is pretty simple. Just make this kid feel safe. Make this kid feel good. And make him know that like whatever's going on outside the walls of this house, inside the walls of this house, he doesn't have to be stressed out. He doesn't have to be scared. And then at some point, he'll be old enough to Google my name, and I will have a lot of explaining to do between the suicide stuff and my bizarre old TV show and
being a lot of the dumb stuff I've done.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of stuff. He's a few years away from being able to intellectually have those conversations, but hopefully before we ever actually get there, there's going to be a time where he's going to sit me down. He's going to go, some kid at school said, you're on HBO because you want to kill yourself. And they're going to make fun of him for it. You know, I've already sat and thought about that. And we'll have the conversation. But my hope is that before we ever even get to that conversation, he's going to grow up in an environment where he just feels, I want to say support, but it sounds trite. It's almost more basic than that of like, yeah, like you're home, you're good. And that's a foundation for you to stand on. And I think that will make the conversation easier, because I think he's going to hopefully someday, and I'm sure there's going to be days where he's like a shitty teenager who doesn't want to give me credit on anything. But I hope someday my son grows old and says, oh, my dad tried to make my home life pretty peaceful, where he has like as much of a chance for this stuff to not affect his life the way it did mine.
That was Chris Gethard talking about his new Scribd original essay, Dad on Pills, Fatherhood and Mental Illness. And since we talked about depression and thoughts of suicide, we wanted to note if you or anyone you know are in crisis, having thoughts of suicide, or need help immediately, you can contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline anytime at 1-800-273-8255, or you can find help at suicidepreventionlifeline.org. All right, it's finally time for recommendations. Zach, what are you recommending this week?
So in my ongoing quest to get Noah to listen to non-shitty music, I took advice from someone from the Facebook group recently that said to start playing her musicals. And she's into that, but she's also still into like Disney stuff. Some of the music, you know, like we talked about earlier with Lion King, is really wonderful. And so I found a kind of hybrid that I think is going to get us out of the kids' zone into something a little bit more sophisticated. Noah on the Disney app started watching a movie called Tinkerbell and the Legend of the Never Beast.
Whoa.
And it happens to be to have original music from Katie Tunstall. And she really likes that. And Katie Tunstall, you know, she's like a folk pop. She had that big song. What was that big song? Like, in the cherry tree. Remember that song from like 10 years ago?
Did I say no?
Mm. Oh, Black Horse and the Cherry Tree. And then also Suddenly I See.
Oh, yeah,
it's not bad. And it's kind of enabling me to play that for her and then like sneak in like Fiona Apple, because it's not so different that she's like, wait, what's this? And so it's just, you know, about finding these bridge songs that she's familiar with from the movie that can also kind of get us out of Disney World. So it's working. We haven't listened to like a full album of good music yet, but I can sneak a couple songs in before she starts getting suspicious.
So if you have a bridge song, tell us on Facebook. We need more.
Yeah, what are your bridge songs?
Zach needs more bridge songs.
Yes. Thanks in advance.
For all the Muslim listeners out there, what up? I have a book that I want to recommend for your little Muslim person. It's called Halal Hot Dogs. And it's written by Susanna Aziz. It's really been hard for me to find like little kid books that have either Muslim themes or like Arabic looking kids in them. So far, I've been like sticking to ones with animals in them because it's just been like a challenge for me. And sometimes I'll get like the religious books and they really lean heavily into like the God thing. And I've been really looking for one that didn't try to explain the religion and was more about the experience of being in that community. And they just have pictures of kids inside the mosque, which has been really hard to find without them being like these little happy babies, you know? So this one's really been a delight. I read it to my son almost every night. And, you know, it's like, it's funny where like the kid is trying to pray, but his stomach is growling because he's hungry. Like it has things like that, that are, it's just everything that I've wanted in a little kid book. Also the main character's name is Musa. So
I don't,
what?
Oh my gosh, that's perfect.
That's exciting.
It's everything I've ever wanted.
And now I want a hot dog.
There's another kid book then that's called like Mo and Mo, and it's about like a Jewish and a Muslim friend that live like nearby and they become friends. So I've been reading my kid all as many stuff like that that's about like the community.
Yeah.
And I just am so happy about it.
Okay, cool. These
makes me feel good. Makes me feel like a good dad.
Yeah, you're doing it.
Okay. I found this amazing book about teaching writing lessons. It's something I really struggle with is like, not that making writing fun is hard, but like something that's prepped out when I'm teaching at home. And I found this great book. I even brought it down here because I love it so much. It's called Don't Forget to Write. Mm-hmm. And there's one for older kids, but this one is for elementary grades. And what I love about it is that you open up and one, it tells you exactly how much time the lesson is going to take. It'll say like, this should be done in 4 20-minute lessons, or this should be done in 1 1-hour lesson or whatever. It has all of the kind of like worksheets there for you to copy. And the lessons are so fun. So we just did this one about, we built forts. And then there was a thing in here about like your cave and what's living in your cave. And the kids took their stuff into their cave. And I went in with the little one and we wrote it. There's build something and then fill out a patent application. Like they're really fun and clever. The worksheets are really great. I'm holding them up. Just like all kinds of images and fun things to fill out. And here's why I think even if you're not homeschooling, you should get this. This is a wonderful opportunity on a snow day when you have your kids home to do something that is fun, but also a little bit structured, which I like. And I wasn't sure how the kids would react, but they really, really love it because they all have this like element of play, but then also this product. Like there's writing a comic book where it gives you things that you should read or write before. I just feel like all the work is done. So if you're looking for something like this for summer or for snow days, I like to keep these around for when the kids are home and they're making me crazy. And I'm like, what can we do? I can just go downstairs, make a copy. Again, it's called Don't Forget to Write for the Elementary Grades.
Nice.
All right. Well, that's it for our show. Before you go, please subscribe to the show and leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. Better yet, tell your friends.
Yeah.
If you have a question for us, email us at momanddad@slate.com or post it to the Slate Parenting Facebook group. Just search for Slate Parenting. If you rely on mom and dad, the best way to support the show is by joining Slate Plus, Slate's membership program. Signing up for Slate Plus helps us help all the people you hear on the podcast every week. Members will never hear another ad on our podcast or any other Slate podcast. You also get free and total access to Slate's website. Plus, you'll be supporting our important work. So I hope you'll join if you can. To sign up now, go to slate.com/momanddadplus. Again, that's slate.com/momanddadplus. Thanks. This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson. For Zach Rosen and Amon Ishmael, I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. Thanks for listening.